My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hello, we are with you once again for our June 2022 episode, coming in with just a few days in the month to spare. It's been a busy month, Eric.
Yeah, normally we aim for the middle of each month, but we both took some time off over the last few weeks, which pushed this recording back a bit, but we're here now.
That's right. That's the important thing. Time off is important, too. Welcome to Hanson and Hunt. I'm Kevin Hunt.
And I'm Eric Hanson. We're all set to bring you some relevant news and discussion that we hope helps you with your work in PR, marketing, and communications.
Thank you for listening. You can learn more about us at hansonandhunt.com. You also can send us comments via email or audio on that site, so please check that out. Coming up in this episode, as the threat of a recession looms, should you change your approach to your marketing and comms plans?
And in our spotlight, a novel look at the life of an influencer.
In our quick news segment, the top challenges for PR pros.
We'll also talk about a new report on social listening.
Plus, how you can help your company leaders be more consistent in their approach to posting on LinkedIn. Hanson & Hunt is sponsored by BrandPoint, which has been helping agencies and brands create powerful content, drive guaranteed media placements, and deliver impactful business results for 25 years. Learn more at brandpoint.com/Hanson & Hunt.
Okay, for this month's talking points, some things to think about as economic pressures and uncertainty continue to impact us as consumers and in our roles as communicators and marketers.
None of us have a crystal ball. Of course, life is and has been hard on and off the job over the last few years. And while we don't know what's coming around the economic corner, we can't ignore what's happening right now with the U.S. and global economies. The last few months and weeks have been dominated by headlines about inflation, interest rates, housing costs, gas prices, you name it, the impact of the war in Ukraine, lots of things going on. Your audiences, your customers, and yes, your employees are not immune to those economic pressures. The threat of a recession and what impact it could have is something all of you, whether it's a big CPG or a small nonprofit, should be thinking about for your plans in the months and the year or longer ahead.
In an article in Marketing Brew, Judy Lee of Pinterest said, quote, "Any marketer worth their salt is planning for the possibility of an economic downturn and its effects on marketing strategies." So some of the comms leaders are saying, look for ways to be efficient and make sure your marketing and communications efforts do more for your business or organization. And some are saying, pull back and focus on a few effective things. And then yet others are saying, double down.
Yeah, that's what P&G's chief brand officer, Mark Pritchard, told Adweek, quote, "We need to make sure that we have 52 weeks of media and that it is constant. It's not about spending. It's about reaching as many people as possible with precision and without waste." He added that marketers must innovate more than ever to reach customers and work more with retailers to sell products.
So how are you thinking about the threat of a recession? Kevin and I wanted to tee this one up in hopes we can talk through some of the things you should be considering for your comms planning.
Yeah, I thought we could talk about three things, each of us, that we think you should be considering for external communications as we sit on the edge of what could turn into a recession, regardless of what your budget situation is now or over the next year. It's not too early to think about this. In fact, the current situation already feels like we're really ready for these ideas right now. So Eric, you want to start us off?
Yeah, and I should probably reserve my recommendations for the areas I know at least a little bit about, which would fall under social media marketing and to an extent PR. So I think my I have three. My first one would be I would think about using my social ad budget a bit more judiciously in 2022 and going into 2023. I'd study my analytics and results in the last 6 months to a year, and maybe double down on areas where social ads are working, and maybe shy away from those areas that are on the periphery where you might normally invest, but maybe they're not working quite as well. And I might limit experimentation a little bit too. I mean, budgets are going to be pulled back probably. So to me, that would be a good place to start with social ad spend, since that's such a huge part of any social media budget at this point. Second, I'd actually, and I know Kevin's not going to want to hear this, but I'd actually pull back on content creation. And I'm not going to say this in like pull everything back, but in the vein of most brands are already producing way too much content. So that's kind of what I mean by that. Like, here's your opportunity to rein it in and focus more on content quality versus quantity. So for example, instead of posting five times a week on LinkedIn, what about just twice? Like, just ratchet your frequency back and focus on that quality. I think that's a good move for most companies, recession or not, but the recession is going to give you an excuse to do it. And then finally, I'd probably work to get more of those executives or other leaders more active on LinkedIn. Speaking of LinkedIn, if you're a company who values LinkedIn as a platform, which increasingly many companies do, that this is where it's at right now with executives versus the brand page. Those executive profiles or leader profiles are absolutely crushing the company pages in terms of reach and engagement. And the combo of the recession and what's going on culturally right now, I think people want and probably need to hear from our leaders, the actual people. And it's going to play to that authenticity too. Like, messages coming from an executive profile are going to carry a lot more weight than messages coming from a brand profile. So those are my three. Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, that's good advice, especially on studying your social ad performance. And of course, I'll share some thoughts on content too. I see your point that, you know, it might be a good time to just, if for those companies that are doing way too much already, you know, I can see your point that it's a good excuse to really be more thoughtful in terms of your frequency. So I'll share some of my content thoughts here in a second. So I guess I would start my advice with a reminder that it seems like every time there's a potential for tighter budgets and a potential recession, we often hear a lot of the experts talk about, don't cut your comms. You don't want to do that. And that is important to hear again. Even right now, you should not disappear when times are tough for your customers and consumers. And more important than ever, to stay in front, top of mind. Reduce frequency, as you suggested, sure, but keep in mind that if you do vanish completely and you go into that survival mode, what does that say about the strength of your company or about your organization? You know, be thoughtful about that, as I said. Let's also not forget, you probably still have numerous jobs to fill at your organization. You need to demonstrate to prospective employees that the lights are on, in fact, and you're doing everything you can to show up for your customers and for the growth of the organization. So here's three ideas from me, and I'll run through these. First, come up with some ways to show that you are a resilient company and you can be useful through your customers, especially if you're in the B2B space. Demonstrate through content in earned media that you're all in on helping those customers weather these economic challenges. Show empathy, of course, as you're in the process of gathering this content. Tell the stories of those customers, how they're continuing to do their work and how you're helping them. I think that's important to really show up for the audience that you're trying to reach. That'll pay dividends, I think. Second, assuming it makes sense for your organization, company, or brand, consider investing in influencers. The people that your audiences are paying attention to are still going to carry weight, even at a downturn. So consider partnering with them to get your messaging across to promote your products and services. I would say don't let off the gas if you've worked with influencers before, or even if you're just starting out. And third, it's about reputation. A potential recession is not the time to back off on content campaigns about your company or organization's purpose. So we hear a lot about the, you know, do you do that purpose work in these kinds of times? And I do think it's important to stay with it. Consumers are very much weighing whether to buy from you, your product, your service, helping them know what you stand for and know that they can trust you, I think helps you ultimately be what they choose to buy. So your content, of course, helps here. And once again, third-party earned media is going to help here too, even as times kind of turn a little bit more challenging. So once again, when it comes to your hiring goals too and prospective employees, focus on your purpose and reputation also helps. You know, how can you reach the talent that you're going to need for the future when you come out of this if you don't continue to tell your story now? So three ideas from Eric, three from me. Hopefully that's helpful. But Eric, thoughts on those that I just laid out?
I liked your first one where you're talking about usefulness. That leads me to think about community when it comes to social. There's been a little bit of this resurgence toward community building and social media over the, during the pandemic specifically. I think that might continue because that's hitting on what you're talking about, like be useful, be a resource. Well, those are key tenets of community building. So I see that as building on a trend that was already happening. So that makes sense to me for sure. I like that one a lot.
If anything, we're maybe more equipped for what may or may not be ahead of us on the economic side in the months ahead, because those that have been in the trenches for the last couple of years, there's some elements of some of these things that we talked about, especially as you said on the community building, you know, that was important to note during the pandemic as well.
And the employer brand stuff is important too, because, you know, the recession is, I think what'll be interesting about the recession is like, is the recession going to have an impact on the job market? Like it usually does, because usually it would, right? And recession would mean people would have layoffs and people would be out of work. Well, we all know how tight the job market is and how short of employees we are. So I'm not sure that'll happen this time around. It might just mean, yeah, companies pull back on budgets and they might not spend as much, but I don't know if it'll mean pull back on employees because they're short to begin with probably right now. So that focus on the employer brand while things go south here for a while, I think is a key one as well.
Yeah. And no matter what size company or brand situation, you know, the adage spend money to make money kind of applies there, of course, but spend money to make sure you're filling those positions and make sure you can continue at the pace you need to be at as times are changing. So many companies, you know, we have many people in our networks that are working for places that have never had so many openings, you know, in the last 10, 20, 30 years. It is continuing, and we see the effects of this and everything we do in our daily lives, you know, where places are short-staffed and things like that, but it's certainly hitting the organization level too. Did you have any thoughts on my third point there on purpose? I'll put you on the spot on that one. You know, there's, as I was doing research to tackle this here for the episode, that there's still this debate over, you know, focusing on the growth of your organization, your selling stuff versus, you know, focusing on purpose. Some people fall strongly in line on one side or the other, or ditching the purpose side of things. That debate doesn't go away. It's not a new one by any means. But what do you make of that in this uncertainty that we face? Like, where do you come in on that?
Well, that's particularly relevant conversation based on what happened last week and the big announcement with Roe v. Wade. So I think if you're a company that's been out in front of this kind of stuff and been purpose-driven and talking about issues pretty consistently the last couple of years, because there's been a lot to talk about, obviously, then I think you continue that. I think that's important not to drop off on that, because people are certainly looking for it. But on the flip side, I'm not sure it makes sense to, like, let's say you were a company that hadn't talked about anything that's been going on, and all of a sudden you're going to start weighing in on these big issues. Like, I don't know if now is the time to do that, because there's pretty meaty issues out there, and just jump right in like that, especially during a recession, might be a little tough. But I think that you should continue if you had been doing that for sure.
And what about a company that is, you know, merely trying to explain what they do, who they help? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you know, highlighting the work, you know, a lot of companies are into hunger relief and, you know, which will be a, you know, the economy goes the direction it's headed, there's going to be a lot of folks in need, right? So yeah. Seeing companies express that they're there. They're there to help. You know, what about that aspect of purpose work?
Yeah, like the mission-driven companies, right?
Yeah.
I think that could be that's going to be a big content play. That kind of gets back to my point about the executives too, because they're often the ones that can be a spokesperson for the brand on that front in terms of what they're doing from a philanthropic point of view, or even more of that purpose driven messaging. That should be a big content play on social, I would think, because, you know, you're in a recession. It's not like you're going to be, see, I don't fall in the line of like, we got to sell during a recession. Like, that's not what people are going to want to hear, man. They're going to want to hear, like you might mention at your first point, a little bit of empathy, a little bit of purpose, a little bit. And now increasingly, like, we're taking stands on these issues. This is the kind of stuff that people want right now. Like, they're not going to want to be sold more stuff when inflation's sky high, not feeling great, maybe not feeling great about themselves for a number of reasons. Like, there's a lot of negativity right now. So pumping up that purpose and mission-driven messaging, I think will probably lend some positivity that we all are going to need, I think, the next 6 months to a year, at least.
Yeah, right. Do good and showcase your partners that help you do that good. And it's not self-serving. Mm-hmm. It's you're doing it for the betterment of the situation. And again, none of us have that crystal ball, but we'll see where it goes. I did want to point out, we focus much of our discussion on external comms and marketing, but you should obviously have plans for your internal comms too. Your employees are wondering how your organization is going to address a possible downturn. They're also feeling, all of us are feeling the impact of inflation and concern for our own budgets. So definitely need a plan on the internal side and really understanding the mindset of your employees. We see a lot of this discussion with folks, again, the whole hybrid or remote work discussion is, why would I drive my car, with gas is $5 a gallon? Your employees are feeling this. So there's some internal comms aspects of this too. And I think you mentioned the executive side of it. CEOs can certainly play a more visible and vocal role as kind of reassuring that employee base as well, I think, with communications, explaining what the company is doing, but also showing that empathy. So I just wanted to make note of the internal aspect there too. So, all right, we'll leave it there. Do you have a comment about anything that we just said or talked about? We'd certainly would love to hear it. Maybe you have some advice for your fellow listeners of the show. So maybe you have an idea also for a future talking point. We'd love to have that. Just go to hansonandhunt.com and look for our contact form. You can certainly record it as an audio clip. We'd love to play it too. Up next, reality becomes fiction as an influencer writes a novel based on her money-making experiences in social media.
And later, should you kill your email newsletter?
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better. Over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
For our spotlight this month, I found a story about our new novel that gives an inside look at the life of a high-end influencer. USA Today interviewed Jenny Mollen, I think that's how you say it, about her novel City of Likes. How's that for a title? Chronicles the life of a copywriter who meets an influencer who takes her under her wing and, quote, welcomes her to the wild materialistic side of Instagram influencing. Now, if you don't know Mollen, and I didn't before I saw this, she's an actress, writer, podcaster. She's appeared in Crazy Stupid Love, Girls, and the Buffy spinoff Angel. City of Likes is based on her own experiences as an influencer in New York. Some of the themes, free stuff is fun and can be life-changing, Eric. Mullen has seen fellow influencers get discounts on apartments, private jet flights, vacations, nose jobs, designer clothes and bags, and more. She says, without social media, I was just another random struggling actress or writer. It gave me the opportunity to create a brand and name for myself. But she says, of course, those free things aren't really free. They come with expectations. But what about if it never stops and there are obligations and strings attached to everything, she asked. She told USA Today influencers can get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars per ad campaign. A major influencer campaign might include an Instagram post plus a day of press, talking to a reporter for an article, and creating some video content, she says. And that could generate upwards of six figures. Well, one-off posting usually stays under 100,000. So she's obviously coming at this from a much grander scale than the micro-influencers and, you know, college athletes these days, right? But as far as the novel, she says the takeaway is we need to choose our real lives over our virtual lives. Easier said than done, I think, for many influencers. Hey, I'm just waiting for the movie of this book. It's got to happen. She's a screenwriter.
I'd watch it. And she's going to cast her husband, obviously. Jason Biggs, she mentioned in the post. Okay, I thought this quote was kind of interesting. Quote, I know how ephemeral fame is. I'm also married to a man who has been in every seat on the Ferris wheel of success, Mollen says, nodding to her husband, American Pie actor Jason Biggs. You're not relevant forever. Most of us are going to disappear into obscurity at some point, and it's how you cope with that. Many of her comments focused on how fleeting this influencer life can be. That was a prime one. And I think that's absolutely true. And really, when you boil it down, what is this work? I mean, she talked about it. It's like, it's basically documenting everything on behalf of a brand, right? Like, if you're not filming it, did it really happen? She kind of mentioned that in the article. It's not real life. And I mean, we as marketers kind of know that, we observe it, but do the influencers know it? That's the question. She realized that I'm not so sure other influencers are going to feel the same. That pull of that money and that glamour is awfully tough to ignore. So I think this is an interesting pullback of the curtain, but man, we see the stats all the time about these kids are like, what do you want to do when you grow up? I want to be an influencer. Like, it's not going away, man, just because she writes one book. So I think it's interesting, but like, man, I don't think it's going to change anything.
Yeah. I'm sure there's many of our listeners could tell stories of working with certain types of influencers who just are really coming at it from la la land, you know, that they're not the down to earth people that we all work with in the day job every day.
Right.
And it's a much different experience when you get somebody who has a distorted sense of reality and they're just kind of, this is their life. And what impact does that have? And again, I haven't read the book. I just read this USA Today article, but it would be interesting if it truly, you know, you look at the impact of what this can do. If this is what your life is 24/7, as long as you can stomach it. The payday might be nice for a select few. It's not real life, as she says. So.
Well, she makes a good point about the materialistic side of it. Like, it's all stuff, right? So like, at the end of the day, it's just you're documenting your life for stuff. And we all know from, you know, a number of sources, medical sources, psychology sources, like, stuff ain't going to make you happy. Right. So like, I feel like it's ready for a crash at some point. I don't think it's gonna happen anytime soon, but at some point, that's going to come crashing back to reality, I think, a little bit. But for now, influencer engine chugs on.
For sure.
All right. It's time for our quick news and quick takes segment. We find three comms or marketing stories and give you our quick summary and reaction to them.
Yeah. First up, the State of PR 2022 survey from MuckRack. Here are just a few highlights that caught my eye. By the way, 82% of the PR pros surveyed, both brand side and at agencies, were in the U.S. So largely U.S. numbers here. Similar to last year, PR pros say that getting responses from journalists, budget limitations, and measuring impact are their top challenges. The survey also says a majority of brands, 89%, have an in-house PR team, and 52% have both in-house and an agency. PR pros at agencies say they work more hours than PR pros at brands. 56% at agencies work 40-plus hours per week, versus 51% at brands. Agencies say they'll spend more time on LinkedIn, Insta, and TikTok, while brands say in the year ahead they'll spend more time on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Interesting. Across company types, PR pros are pitching online digital publications, newspapers, magazines, and TV. 46% of brands will pitch podcasts this year. That's up from 36% last year. So podcasts emerging as a more viable channel to pitch. Thoughts on this survey, Eric?
Yeah, one of the big key takeaways for me was one you mentioned, that was workload, but maybe not in the way that you might think. So the report found that 44% of brand side folks and 40% of agency folks worked 26 to 40 hours a week. And I'm guessing that's probably closer to 40, right? Then 41% of brand side folks and 48% of agency folks said they worked 41 to 50 hours a week. And now here's the rub. Only 10% of brand side folks and a shocking, in my opinion, 8% of agency folks said they worked more than 50 hours a week. I don't know about you listening or you, Kevin. I found this really surprising because maybe it's part of the shift happening in our industry for more reasonable work-life balance. Hopefully that's it.
Yeah. But we finding work-life balance?
We both grew up in an industry where folks on the agency side for sure, but even on the brand side in many cases would work 60, 70 hours a week, easy.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a manager once told me stories of, she worked at a big agency here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. She routinely worked 70-hour work weeks and was sleeping underneath her desk. Yikes. And she said a lot of people were doing that.
Oh, man.
So I've seen a lot of people talk about this on this Muckrack survey. Now they're talking about how PR people are overworked. And I guess I saw the opposite. I saw, you know what? This is actually a good sign. This means we're making progress. Because to me, I read this and I say, if the majority of the people are working less than 40 hours a week, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Because, and even 50 hours is not crazy. So like, I see that as a good thing. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it does show. Maybe we're making some progress after all. And I think when you get a survey like this, or you choose to participate in a survey like this, this is not a question, you know, you're going to fib lie on and lie right. about. No. I mean, it's okay. This is what I work. You know, why would right. you answer this incorrectly? So no. I tend to believe it's probably a pretty good accurate mm-hmm. statement of where we're at, and still obviously the expectation mm-hmm. is most of us work 40 to 50, but yeah, at least to have that number come mm-hmm. down for the truly quote unquote overworked, you know, that's probably a good thing and evidence of what the last 2 years has really driven home.
Well, right. Yeah.
All right. Our second quick news item is the recent State of Social Listening report from Social Media Today. Bottom line, across several industries and about 650 social pros who we're in the responses. Most businesses do have an established approach to social media monitoring. Not all of them feel like they're maximizing their opportunities, though. Almost 61% of businesses now have a social listening system in place and are monitoring things like keyword mentions. Not sure what those other 39% are thinking, but respondents said that brand sentiment and reputation management is their biggest focus, followed by brand awareness. The report says many brands are also now using social listening to track industry trends as well, while crisis management, competitive analysis, and campaign analysis were lesser considerations. No surprise that the two biggest impediments to effective social listening are time and, of course, your employee bandwidth. Eric, for whatever reason, it's clear many orgs are still not prioritizing social listening. So what gives?
Yeah, I feel like we've been saying the same thing for, 10 years now. Really. But clearly brands are still not prioritizing social listening because sure, you said the 61% said they have systems in place, but 42% said time was a constraint and 40% said employee bandwidth was a constraint. Well, to me, that screams prioritization. Like until the PR and social teams start taking this seriously, it's not going to deliver the results that it truly can. So to me, that was the story. And what's more, at the tail end of the survey, they asked people to describe their social listening approach, and almost 50% said they don't know enough about it. Now, based on the other answers I saw to that question, there may have been some survey design issues there. Like maybe the question was worded weird or something, but still, when 50% of those surveyed say, basically, I can't provide an answer because I'm not up to speed on this topic. In 2022 on social listening, that's not great. That's a big problem. So, especially this has been around for, again, I go back, this has been around for years, but how long have I been talking about social listening? At least 10 years, right? It should not be complicated in 2022, especially when social listening can deliver, like you said, all those things they should be doing with it. Huge impacts for your business. And you have 50% of the respondents saying, I don't really know what it means. Like that's a problem.
Yeah, I would think that 61% who have systems would be more in the 70s for sure and should be in the 80s.
By now, yeah.
By now, exactly. Yeah, who knows? Okay, our final piece of quick news is a post from Matt Carillion. I think that might be mispronouncing your name, Matt. I'm sorry about that. He's with the Boston Globe. It's titled, "The Collapse of the Email Newsletter is Coming. Long live the newsletter." It's an in-depth opinion post, mainly looking at email newsletters from media outlets. He's coming at it from the journalist side. But I think there are enough takeaways here for anyone in comms as well. He writes that email newsletters have been the darling of the digital media world over the past 3 to 4 years, but I'm increasingly concerned the industry has dramatically overinvested in the space. Of course, many of us and our organizations turned to email newsletters after our referral traffic from social platforms took a big dip, but Carillion says the enthusiasm for email newsletters is misguided. First, he writes that newsletters are largely not indexed by search, and search makes up a big chunk of publisher traffic, 30%. He also says, despite significant investment in newsletters, consumers are getting their news from email less and less. He cites the Oxford Digital News Report showing that email newsletter usage has seen a 21% decline in overall usage as it relates to news in recent years. Third, he says both Apple and Gmail present some challenges to the analytics for newsletters. Apple, with its push toward privacy, and Gmail with how it sorts your emails into 5 categories like social, promotions, things like that. Finally, he says the state of the email inbox is a mess. The quote, "dumping the products of some of your most resource-intensive newsroom efforts into the wasteland of email inboxes is an outright silly thing to do." Well, so what should anyone with a newsletter do? One thing he suggests is to divorce the message and the medium. He says newsrooms, and for our purposes, your org, should put the damn newsletters on the front page of your site. Take an article template, format it appropriately for the newsletter content written for email. Give it the benefit of SEO, social, internal tailwind. So, Eric, I'm curious if this made you think twice about the email newsletter that you send out each Friday, or are you at all concerned with the future of the newsletter as a medium?
First of all, I'm not really sure. What was the quote you just mentioned there? I thought it was funny.
The outright silly thing to do, the wasteland of email
inboxes. Dumping products in your vast wasteland of inboxes. Like, it struck me as, I mean, a little extreme, maybe.
But, well, those of us that check our email every day, you know, we might be the exception, apparently.
Vast wasteland. So, I don't know. Right off the top, though, I understand this guy's from the Boston Globe. He's talking about media. But on the brand side, I would totally agree with the premise that brands be thinking about e-newsletters as a traffic driver. Like, I don't think that's the way brands think about newsletters at all. I mean, maybe a little bit, but not, I certainly don't. The brands I work with certainly don't. So I think that's a faulty premise off the top. Maybe for media, that's true. For brands, I'm not sure that's true. So that, to me, that clouds the rest of the argument a little bit. However, he is right about the challenges with Apple and Gmail, for sure. That's huge. The inbox thing, like I said, might be a little overstated. Like, there's something to that, right? Like, inboxes are very cluttered and breaking through is tougher. But on the other side, like, getting into inbox is still a huge deal for brands. So I'm not sure. I'm not ready to say it's a fast wasteland quite yet. But I do like the idea of repurposing newsletter content. However, again, the way he's talking, he's treating this like a groundbreaking idea. It's like, well, people have been doing this for years, man. Like, you're always, in fact, it's usually the opposite. You're taking a piece of content from your website or your blog and you're repurposing it on the newsletter, right? So I like that idea, but it's not exactly new. I guess overall, I don't think newsletters are dead at all. I don't even think they're floundering. So I'm a little curious. Like he does bring up some, I guess he's backing it up with some stats and facts, but I don't necessarily agree with all of them, I guess, outside of the Apple and Gmail one.
I think it likely comes down to who you're trying to reach and demographics of the folks who do go into that vast wasteland in their inbox is a little bit different. I'd love to see, we talk a lot about, you know, the declining use of Facebook by Gen Z and even folks in the 30s. Is that true for email as well? Anecdotally, I have three adult children who, for them, unless it's for work and it's email, they're not looking at it. And I would love to see a study on that because we may find that email is not where, you know, a good chunk of the population is spending their time. So there might be something to that, but there certainly is value in other demographics that, you know, if you have an email newsletter, that there might be some value in continuing that and your purpose. So,
all right, let's move on to our Q&A segment.
Yeah, it's a question for you this month, Eric. Here it is. I've been able to get a few of our senior leaders on LinkedIn, and they're posting a bit, and they're commenting on posts from their connections, but I want them to be more consistent. Any advice? This also led you to share some of your thoughts on your blog about this, so we'll link to that in our show notes. So what do you think, Eric? How can comms pros encourage leaders to be more consistent in their LinkedIn activity?
This is a really good question, and one I'm getting more and more from clients and friends in general. And I think the first thing to keep in mind is that your exec needs to have some skin in the game. So you can't do this without them. So setting up regular check-in meetings with them, even if it's just for even 10 minutes, I think is critical. This is where you get the valuable input and feedback from them, which is obviously key to developing content or comments. If you're doing if you're developing comments on their behalf, you have to have that input. So that's number one. But one of the biggest keys is getting executives to publish a bit more, is often just capitalizing on existing opportunities. So for example, what about recent PR wins? And I'm not talking about just PR placements that include a quote from the executives. I'm talking about, you know, that any PR placement that's focused on the company, that's good enough. They should be talking about those placements, and those are easy fodder for the executive. So, and the bonus points come in, your PR partners are going to be super happy with you and that you're finding additional ways for them to leverage the placements. So that's an easy one. What about engaging with employees via polls? This is a super easy tactic, but one I don't hardly see any executives doing on LinkedIn. What could you just work with your employee comms partners to see what the burning issues are with employees internally and play off that with a poll question, given that it doesn't include obviously information that's proprietary or can't go external. As an alternative, what about a poll that fuels innovation, right? You poll your customers for ideas on how to make your products or services better. Like there's so many areas for opportunity with polls with executives. I think that's another key one. And then finally, why wouldn't you highlight the executive's philanthropic and volunteer activities? This lends itself so well to photos too. And we know almost every executive, if not all of them, are giving back in some way, right? So find out how they're doing that and then start to work to tell that story through regular posts. I would argue that should be a content pillar for every executive, really. Because again, I know that we know they're doing it. So once you take care of that low-hanging fruit, I think next big opportunity is to get them to open up a bit about and to show their human side. So this doesn't have to be as daunting as most people think, because I think most executives think it is daunting. I think it's like start with big life events, right? Like taking your kid to college, high school graduation, vacations, like just basic things that are fairly big life events, anniversary, whatever. You want to talk about things, or you want them to talk about things that everyone else experiences. This is, in my opinion, the key to helping them create that connection and that trust between executive and employee or executive and customers. For a couple of good examples, look at what like Jeff Martha does at Medtronic, or Ed Bastian at Delta Airlines. He had a great post last year where he took his daughter to college at Georgia. And it was nothing fancy, but he had good pictures of him and his daughter, and he talked about the experience. That's relatable to everybody that has a kid, or most people that have kids. That's where I would usually start when I'm talking about getting executives to be more active. I don't know. What would you add, Kevin? You've done this kind of work in the past, and you've looked at this kind of work in the past. What do you think? Would I miss anything?
No, those are all great. I'm sure you're filling up the notebooks of many of our listeners right now. Really good stuff. I would go back to your first one, and kind of my ad would relate to that one when you said, you know, having those check-ins with the leaders and just understanding what it is they're, you know, thinking about in their approach to LinkedIn overall. And I think the piece I would say is if you're lucky enough to have a good relationship with that leader, maybe it's somebody you've known mm-hmm. for a while, or even you've developed it over time from that work capacity, understanding them, how they think, how they tick, you know, is also part of that. So that check-in allows you to offer up advice. You know, if you know them a little bit more, you know what kind of way that they're leaning with some of the things that they want to do. That can be a productive check-in, and it doesn't need to be 30 minutes. So you could, you know, as you said, right. It could just be 10, 15 minutes. So yes. I would just add to that, you know, have a strong relationship with the leaders if you're fortunate enough to be able to develop it that way. So yeah, really good stuff. Okay. Send us your question through our website. We may choose yours for next month. And speaking of LinkedIn, if you're listening to this before June 29th, and I realize, you know, we're getting this out probably on the morning of the 28th, but you still have time to register to be a live participant in a free workshop that Eric is hosting on the overall use of LinkedIn. The sign-up link is in our show notes. It's at noon central on Wednesday the 29th. So join live if you can. Get your questions answered by Eric. Of course, he'll share the recording of it afterwards, as he usually does on LinkedIn. If you miss it, what else would you say about what you have on the way with that?
Yeah, I think it's just going to be more of a general how to boost your presence on LinkedIn, basically not really targeted at executives like we just mentioned before, but more you could use some of the things you learn in there to apply to that. But it's more just designed to help the regular person in our industry kind of boost their presence on the platform. All right, let's wrap this episode up. As we mentioned off the top, we're a bit later this month than usual. Because we both had family vacations that affected our schedule to get the show together. So you battled the crowds at Disney World. How did that go?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, we did. We had a family trip. So wife and I and the three adult children, which is a scary premise, I know. But we hadn't really taken a full family vacation in a while. We were waiting for the younger son to officially graduate from college, and he was able to, you know, complete his student teaching duties. And this trip was also planned. Hadn't seen my younger brother down in Florida since Christmas of 2019. So was really anxious to see him and give him a big hug and see his wife and kids too. So, you know, we braved Disney World for a couple of days before we made our way to my brother. And let me just say, I will never again visit Florida in the months of May, June, July, August, mm-hmm. September. You know, we'll see if it's still pushing 90 degrees in September. But if you're not used to, those of you listening from Florida, you know, us Northerners come down and we literally sweat the second we get off the airplane. And that was it's very, very sweaty in 90 degree weather. We are
it's a little hot down there.
It's very hot. We had a couple of hot days, but we got to do everything. For years, I've been wanting to see the Galaxy's Edge and Star Wars stuff, and so all our entire family is Star Wars freaks. So we did that. We got to do that. We got to do the new Guardians of the Galaxy ride at Epcot, which was amazing. If you haven't had a chance to check that one out yet, man, it in the dark inside, you know, really cool ride. So yeah, we had a couple days there, and then family time toward the end. But nice. When I go back to visit, it'll be in the winter up here,
January. January probably be a better month,
right?
For the Hunt family, to visit, yes.
And you just had some beach time. I saw many of your photos posted. You made us all jealous.
Yeah, we had a pandemic trip planned that we had to punt till now, which was to St. Thomas and St. John, which is somewhere we've been multiple times, but we love it there. So yeah, we just went and sat on a beach for 7 days. It was a little rocky getting there. We had a canceled flight.
Oh my!
The day of when we left, and that'll. Took us through Boston and Fort Lauderdale, Miami, and we got there daylight. But after that fiasco was behind us, the trip was fantastic. So
I'm sure your entire family stayed patient through all of those things.
Right. Yeah. Well, it wasn't so bad, actually. My wife lost her bag. That was the big thing. So she didn't have her bag for 2 days in St. Thomas. But other than that, I feel like we handled it pretty good because, like, the kids, I mean, they've never been through a canceled flight fiasco before. So like wake up at 3 a.m, ready to go. I see on my phone, the flight's canceled. We're like, okay, plan B, here we go, guys. And I was prepared to tell you the truth, Kevin, I was prepared to completely shit can the trip and like, okay, we're just going to drive to Yosemite or something like that. You know, like just completely different trip. Right. Off the cuff.
That would have been me.
That's what I was thinking about. So, I was just happy we got to go at that point.
You know what the experts say, Eric, pack your patience.
Pack your patience. That's never been more true, man. Airport travel is not for the faint of heart right now.
Yeah, for sure.
So it looks like you're looking for a couple new roles at CHS. You want to talk about that for a second, too, before we jump off?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Currently posted a senior digital content strategist. This will be a key role for me, my right-hand person to help guide storytelling at CHS. Mm-hmm. So posted for that. And a social media specialist, which is more of a junior role, but certainly looking for someone with strong judgment and experience and thoughts around social media and how we can help CHS in that area as we get our storytelling and editorial work ramped up. And I'm excited to see what applicants come through for those. But again, just posted them last week. So as we're recording this on June 27, both of them are still pretty fresh. So go check those out if you're for sure interested. We should note as we wrap here too, you know, big NBA fans are we are. We just got through the NBA draft. The Wolves are just stockpiling talent left and right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, if you count players,
defensive player of the year
in the 20s of the draft, if you count that,
I count it.
And your buddy Andrew Wiggins is now an NBA champion.
Rock Chalk. It's the year of Rock Chalk, man. My team wins the title and Andrew Wiggins gets the ring. Rock Chalk Jayhawk.
I don't know. I saw a graphic where Kevin Love, Wiggins, all these guys have titles.
The Wiggins one really is quite amazing, if you ask me, because he was...
Kevin Garnett was the other one, by the way, too.
Mark Garnett's a big one, yeah. We both know what he was like as a player here. And to see him be like borderline finals MVP... Borderline finals MVP. I mean, obviously Steph was going to get it, but like if the next step down was him, that's insane based on where he came from here.
Well, I'm just glad he figured out that maybe he is a good basketball player. And
he figured something out,
he should use his skills for the betterment of his career. Yes.
Good for him.
Exactly. Hey, 4th of July coming up this weekend. What's planned for the Hanson family?
I have no big plans. We're coming off a vacation like we just talked about, so we're trying to lay low. How about you?
We're pretty much laying
low. Nothing.
Yeah.
That's the name of the game. I like that. I'm looking forward to that, to tell you the truth. So I got no problems with that at all.
Long weekend here in the U.S.
Not at all. All right. Time to go. Check out our show notes for more info. Again, we thank you for spending time with us, as always.
Yeah, we hope our show is helpful to you and your work. Please spread the word and tell a friend or a colleague about it.
Our next episode for July will be just in a few weeks. So join us for that and take care until then.